The three vases I'm looking at are from the three of the four eras that we study, namely the Archaic, Early Classical, and Late Classical eras. The pieces are The Wedding of Peleus and Thetis by Sophios from 580 BC on Adenos, Perseus Killing Medusa by the Pan Painter, 460 BC on a Hydria, and Heracles and the Hesperides by the Medias Painter, 424 to 400 BC. All three are distinctly different and offer positives and negatives in different areas of vase painting. The Wedding of Peleus and Thetis. The facts are by Sophios, 580 BC, and it's on Adenos. The key factors are its realism and its background, drapery, and decorations. On the basis of realism, the realism on this piece is mixed, as is to be expected in an archaic piece. The realism on Chiron is poor, as his body is clearly facing backwards, but his legs are facing forward. This is an attempt at movement, shown again by the feet being spaced apart in a walking motion. However, the god himself looks like a man who has had a horse's body hastily added, and poor craftsmanship is on display here. In a wider context, the realism is a success for the archaic period, not to the extent of Ajax and Achilles playing a game by Exequias, 540 BC on an amphora, but it is successful nonetheless. The characters are all proportionate height-wise amongst each other, however it must be pointed out that the house to the right of the piece is the same height, if not smaller, than the rest of the characters, and again, poor craftsmanship is shown. Background drapery and decorations. The decorations on this piece are typical of the archaic period. The Corinthian animals on display in the second and third friezes are successful in filling the space in a decorative and interesting way. The Orientalism in the centre of the second row draws the eye towards it successfully, and from this, the eye is drawn towards the main frieze on top, depicting the wedding. In this piece, there is a lot of colour and vibrance, especially in the gods themselves. They all have different clothes on which it is not consistent with the archaic principle where most characters have the same clothing, as shown by the Maenads in Dionysus and Two Maenads by the Amasis painter, 550 BC on an Ek amphora. Conclusions. For an archaic piece, it is pretty amazing. The colours used are a success, and the composition and sombre feel of this piece works a charm. While proportionately it does fall down, in other decorative aspects this that it serves, it is most certainly a success. Perseus Killing Medusa. It's by the Pan Painter, 460 BC on a Hydria. I think its main features are movement, composition, and emotion. The movement in this piece is comical, in that it is over-stylized, non-naturalistic, and not typical of its portrayal of the gods. The dainty way in which Artemis is running, holding the hem of her dress, is both comical and controversial, in that a goddess is usually portrayed in honor and strength. Athena in Hector and Achilles by the Berlin painter, 490 to 480 on a volute crater, is an example of this. The composition of Perseus is comical, with his high legs spread wide apart. This is not a typical running style, and in the context of this piece is rather comical. The fact that Medusa's head looks more sleepy and peaceful than dead is another comical point, and the balletic fashion in which her lifeless body is falling shows this as well. The conclusions for this piece is that it is both funny and a success, in that it is a successful satire on other earlier vase paintings, and its compositional shortcomings can be seen as party to this idea. Finally, Heracles and the Hesperides. It's by the Medias painter, 424 to 400 BC, and it's on a Hydria. The fact that there are two friezes is a departure from the early classical and high classical norm of a singular primary frieze. The last we saw this was in the Archaic era, with Corinthian animals and orientalization used to fill the space. The geometric patterns break this up successfully. Focusing on composition, realism, and proportionality, this piece is very much technically advanced, as there is clear catagrapha on many of the characters on both of the friezes, which was initially seen in Three Men Carousing by Euthymides, 510 BC on an amphora. The musculature is defined without being stylized, which is a change. There is also a much better depiction of animals on display in this piece, as shown by the flying horses in formation, not all being drawn the same. Their legs are bending differently, and the heads are not uniform in their position. However, apart from this, there are no sparkling features that revolutionized the vase painting genre, or that was done in the early and high classical eras. And while this is a good piece when compared to other eras, one would expect more from the late classical era, so this piece is somewhat disappointing.
vases I have chosen, these are the things I like about my vases. First one is Ajax and Achilles playing a game made by Exequias, who was once described as the greatest of black figure artists. Here, Exequias has created an intense scene, which I think we can all agree we love. Some of the best things about this piece are the lines of composition which reflect each other, and in many ways mirror Homer's description of these two figures in the Iliad, where they are opposite each other. Now, the lines of composition, which are so good, you have the spears, which mirror each other, splitting the field of view into three distinct sections. The middle is where all the action happens, and we have our eyes directed by all the diagonals to the board in the centre. The game board is framed, trapping the attention of the viewer and intensifying the drama of the game. The attention to symmetry, while remaining interesting, is particularly well done. The shields follow the points of the handles, continuing the lines there to a point which is nicely resolved, and the ends of the shield being a point or effectively merges into the background and nicely finishes off the line of the handles. The detail on the shields and cloaks is also very impressive. Whereas he could have made the shields dull and impassive, we instead have detailed patterns on them, as you can see in the pictures in Woodford. The snake has individual scales incised, which is an impressive feat considering the detail which that constituted and how many other pieces did not have detailed animal figures. The different patterns also distinguish them, making each shield a work of art in itself. My second vase is the Francois vase, made by Clytias in 570 BC. Now, Clytias can be seen in some ways as inferior to many other artists at the time. We can look at Sophilos, for example, and say that potentially, despite being 10 years before, he has made a much better pot. Clytias's, by contrast, could seem confused and ugly, with little colour and too much detail. We can say that the cheery composition of Sophilos's Dinos is much better than Clytias's. However, upon closer inspection, we realise that Clytias was indeed a master storyteller, that his artistic ability is immense, and that when considered in context, we can appreciate that this is potentially one of the greatest masterpieces of Greek art. We can see in the frieze below the wedding of Peleus and Thetis, the pursuit of Troilus by Achilles. This myth would have been well known at the time. The story goes that Achilles ambushed Troilus, who were trying to escape on his horse, at Troy. However, Achilles was so fast that he was able to chase the escaping man and catch him on foot. From what we can see of the story, Achilles' back leg is raised off the ground, showing him leaping towards the fleeing horses, his leg in a springing position, the toes slightly pointed towards the ground, implying he has just leaped, and his legs matching the diagonal of those of the horses. This story is told in the form of a comic strip. Clytias shows the entire story as it happened, skillfully depicting different times on a continuous frieze. The most moving part can be seen as being Priam being given the news by Antenor that his son is dead. All these figures show how successful the storyteller Clytias was, and are one of the main reasons I like this pot. The choice of the Trojan War to depict, and the scene which is chosen, also reminds us of Book 22 of the Iliad by Homer, with Achilles there catching and killing Hector. This adds the pathos we feel, and changes the painting into a story. If we look closer, as you can see on page 19 of Woodford, there is a depiction of Ajax carrying Achilles' body. This is another story from the Trojan War. This image would have been very small, as it was on the handle of a vase. However, that does not detract from the detail which has obviously been put into it. The skill which is present to incise the individual curving lines in Achilles' hair and the fingers on his hand is immense. Also, to have double lines around the helmet area, despite the fact that there are other larger pieces which do not attempt that level of detail, is impressive. One final thing which is great about this piece is the proliferation of labels. These allow the artist to fill up empty space and to keep it from detracting from the piece which is being focused on and the story. My third vase is Artemis and Apollo slaying the Naiades. This piece shows the influence of Polygnotos of Phaios, who was a wall painter of great fame. In order to make large groups of figures interesting without any action was often considered difficult, and as such Polygnotos decided he would vary the heights of the figures on the wall to make them more interesting and to imply perspective. This is what makes this side so good. We have a collection of unconnected heroes, most obviously Heracles, but we can speculate as to the others. They are evidently heroes, but in a startling break from tradition, comparable to the Nemean lion Metapae on the Temple of Zeus, these characters are stationary and not engaged in the epic struggles we have seen in other vases. This contrasts with many other parts, even the other side of this one. The large group of figures would look dull without violence, but we can see interesting disbursement and wonder as to the situation where these great heroes would have met. On the other side of the vase, we can see Artemis and Apollo slaying Niobes. This is not one of the more successful depictions of violence in vases, but we can see lots of emotion as the figures on different levels laying sprawled, and Artemis and Apollo have strange grins as they shoot their prey.
The first piece I'm going to talk about is Perseus pursued by the Gorgons on a Deinos, 600 to 590 BC, by the Gorgon painter. What I most like about this piece is the attempt at movement from such an early piece. There are over two Gorgons chasing Perseus. Their right leg are bent and their right heels are up. In addition, their elbows are bent at a 90-degree angle. Their bodies are also clearly leaning forward as their back leg is quite far behind. Maybe even better is Medusa on my left-hand side falling. Her legs are bent and her arms are going towards the ground. This is a realistic falling pose, which is quite amazing for the time. Additionally, Perseus is clearly running away. Aside from the movements, the characterization is also impressive. The Gorgons are scary. Their heads are larger than they should be. They have large eyes and large tongues sticking out, as well as the hair being made of snakes. This attempt at trying to portray the myth is again impressive for its time. What I also like about this piece are the orientalizing patterns in Corinthian animals below the main frieze. The orientalizing pattern is intricate and detailed, although very repetitive, as is normally the case. Similarly, the Corinthian animals have nothing really to do with a scene, but are just there for decoration and are aesthetically pleasing, and they gradually fall out of favour with artists in the near future after this was made. The second piece is Heracles feasting in the presence of Athena, which is a bilingual amphora made between 530 and 515 BC, and the black figure is by the Lysippides painter, and the red figure by Andocides. My favourite part of this piece is the portrayal of depth and comparing the portrayal of depth between black and red figure. Red figure has a distinct advantage here, as it has an extra colour with which to create depth. For example, the calyx on the table below Heracles is clearly in front of Heracles' bed, whereas this cannot be done with black on black on the black figure side. Similarly, it works compositionally that Heracles' head is in front of the orientalizing pattern on the top, as is Athena's helmet on both of them though, but again, the depth is better. Nevertheless, the framing of the piece is better on the black figure. There is a boy and a Deimos on the right-hand side, and a messenger and Athena on the left-hand side, whereas there is only Athena on the left-hand side of a red figure. This is more aesthetically pleasing to the eye. Additionally, in this piece, one can compare emotions on the characters' faces, again with red figure having an advantage. Athena on the red figure has a little smile, whereas nothing can be said of her on the black figure. Also, the extra colour gives more chance to have a defined eye, defined nose and beard on Heracles. The diaphanous clothing is also not possible on black figure. Finally, my favourite piece of the three is Polynices and Eriphyle by a Chicago painter, 460 to 450 BC on a pellicer. The emotion here is amazing. Polynices has a tiny grin on his face, indicating this is being crafty. He is. He knows that Eriphyle's husband will die if he fights for him, which he will do once he gives him a necklace. So he's effectively condemning a man to death by doing this selfish act. He's also leaning forward, indicating that he is doing something crafty. Eriphyle, on the other hand, does not show her body to Polynices, but is turned away, with only her hand out and her head turned round to get the beads. She's clearly suspicious of Polynices, and rightly so. Two more aspects of this pellicer please me. Firstly, there is an orientalizing pattern above and a geometric pattern below the scene, which is quite interesting, as it is a sort of amalgam of early and high classical and archaic work. Finally, the flamingo at the bottom of the piece has nothing to do with the storyline. It's just there to fill up the space, but it is very nice, and the neck is beautifully elegant.
The first painting I'm going to talk about is by the Berlin painter, 490 to 480 BC, on an Attic red figure, Volute Crater. What I love most about this piece is the movement and the characterization of Hector and Achilles. The contrast between the two warriors is striking. Achilles, effortless, thrusting his whole body forward, threatening and determined. However, tragically, Hector, completely wide open, faltering, and already wounded. The craftsmanship on this vase is clear. The well-painted shield buckle creates depth between the shield and hands and arms of Hector. Also, the gods act as a bracket around the two fighters. There's also a contrast between the two of them. Athena is interacting with the scene, urging Achilles on with her pointed finger. However, Apollo appears to be turning away, resigning himself to the fact that the warrior he backs will die. Hector is doomed against his formidable foe. Overall, an emotive and effective piece of art. The second piece I will talk about is by the Pan painter, made in 474 to 450 BC on an Attic red figure Oinokoe, titled Boreas Pursuing Orithyia. What I like most about the Pan painter is the difference to his contemporaries. Although it's a tense and shocking moment, there's a sense of comedy about it, with Boreas bounding with lack of facial expression. However, the movement and fluidity is very effective. As I said before, the kick from one leg and the snatch is very, very effective. Also, the craftsmanship is very significant in this piece. The delicate and very small brush strokes on Boreas give the effect of his cloak billowing in the wind when he's bounding to catch the woman he loves. Drapery is fantastic. Also, although it could be argued that it is comical, the old man to the right of the vase in the veiled face and mourning pose gives the piece a more tragic feel. It brings us back down to earth that this is a shocking event. Finally, the last piece I will be talking about is Odysseus meeting Elpenor in the underworld, painted by the Laocoon painter around 400 BC on an Attic red figure Pelike. What I love about this piece is the emotion, the solemn mood on Odysseus's face. Some argue to be remorseless, however I believe it more to be of futility. Both he and Elpenor staring blankly at each other, they know that Odysseus can't do anything. Elpenor is lost forever in the underworld. When regarding craftsmanship, the subtle brush strokes help the drapery to be very impressive. Attention also has been given to the long, twisting plants Elpenor emerges from. On top of this, the three-quarter view in Elpenor is in no way subtle. It's very effective. Finally, there has been a definite attempt to improve the depth of this piece. All the characters are on different levels, a more insightful piece of work by the Laocoon painter. In all, I find them three very effective pieces of art, all for their different reasons. Thank you for listening.